Blog Talk Radio.
To welcome everyone to John Talk Radio Independent Music Showcase. I'm your host, John Darlington. We are at August the 12th, 2020. We've made it all the way to August the 12th. My special guest today is Mike Crooker from the band Librarians with Hickeys. Mike, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on, John.
Oh, it's great to have you. There's a lot to talk about, but there's a date coming up, August 14th. That's kind of an important date for you guys. Would you like to share that with us?
Well, it's been a long 18 months to get us to this point, but August 14th mm-hmm. is, in fact, the day our record is going to be released, called Long Overdue, and it's out on Big Stir Records. And I'm just happy to have made it this far to August 12th.
Me too. Well, this is awesome.
Everybody.
I mean, yeah, we can celebrate that every day. We were talking about off mic a little bit, you know, getting up and getting things going today, and Mike having a pretty good day so far today. And it's been one of those times where, gosh, you know, it's almost like Groundhog Day. But but if you get up, you know, and you're alive and you look around and your family's there and everything's cool, it's okay with me. You know, it's like, let's do this. And, but one of the saving graces of this, pandemic and this, weird time that we're living in is music. And, this show celebrates music, and we celebrate that we have it and that we can listen to it and that people like you guys, the Librarians with Hickeys, are making great music. And there's nothing I like better, Mike, than to, you know, you send me the files, I listen to them, I think they're great. Listening to new music has always been like I'm a junkie for that. You know, I'm always looking for that next song, that next chord change, that, you know, lost chord kind of a thing. And to hear good music, it's just, I mean, I've been around a long time, so I know I was there when, you know, when the whole British invasion thing started, and I was just a teenager. And I remember all that, and I was really glad that happened. But I don't, although I do have a lot of connections to that and to psychedelic rock and to garage rock, and that's my favorite kind, but I still enjoy new music every day. I just think it's, there's something about it, you know, you just can't lose that. What is it with you guys? What part is from the librarians? We want to like have you introduce them, but if you could explain the sound of Librarians of Pickies and how you, you know, are you influenced from the past? What, you know, like I've got a foot in the past and moving towards the future. What did Casey Kasem said, feet on the ground and reaching for the stars and all that crazy stuff. Explain your sound to the people.
Well, sure. I mean, we survived the 60s and the 70s and the 80s, like most people. And part of our sound really is rooted in that, you know, the oboe, if you will. You know, we listen to a lot of that stuff. We lived through it. When it came time to write this music, this album, we started off with that song you just played, Until There Was You, and the third song in the album, And Then She's Gone. Those were the first two songs we wrote for the album, and they really set the blueprint for the way things went forward. So we had a lot of, you know, at its core, it's two guitars, bass, drums, and harmony vocals. I mean, that's sort of a timeless, classic sort of feel for that kind of thing. And, you know, we're not in reinventing the wheel here, but, you know, that was sort of our path forward, was starting from that standpoint, especially from Until There Was You.
Yeah, and that's pretty cool. Now, this is probably a good time to introduce the members of the band.
Sure. Singing and vocals on and guitar is Ray Carman. Bass is Drew Wilco. And drums is Rob Crossley. And myself on guitars and various percussion and pianos and string arrangements and stuff like that. I produced the record. I engineered it. Did it all here at home.
So how did you guys meet?
We formed in 2016. The four of us have all played in bands together, just not all at the same time. We
That's pretty
had,
good.
Yeah, we've known each other for years and years and years, and we came to a part in our careers where we all said, let's try this. And in 2016, we got together, we played some live shows. And once that started, around 2018, we started writing the material that makes up the bulk of the record. And that's why I said it's been a long 18 months from writing to the part, you know, to where we are today, where it finally gets released. So we released the single in the late 2018, which was Until There Was You. And then Big Stir heard it and contacted us in early 2019 and said, would you like to do a single, which turned into Black Velvet Dress and Alex, which are both also on the record. And then after that, in late 2019, they said, would you like to do a record? And we couldn't say yes fast enough.
That's
we
great.
Jumped on that. And we would do recording in between live shows, and then we played our last live show in February of this year, and that's pretty much where it all went to hell afterwards. So as it turned out, they had scheduled the record for August of this year, and that was what I have done basically from February through about June. Did nothing but work on the record. The extra time.
Wow.
I spent a lot of extra time on the record, the extra care, and I wouldn't necessarily, suggest using a pandemic to make a better record, but here we are, and that's
yeah.
What happened.
That's pretty cool. So what is it? I got a couple of questions. What is it about the other band members when you heard them play in other bands? You were playing in bands, they were playing in bands. What made you want to be in a band with them?
Oh, that's easy. I mean, Rob, our drummer, and I have been playing in bands on and off for the last 20-something years. And I knew when we wanted to do this project, it was like he was the first guy I called because it was an easy call. And Drew and Rob had played in a band together that I had produced a record of theirs. And so I knew Drew really well from working in the studio with him. And then Ray had worked with my old band years and years and years ago as a not only as our manager, but also I produced his solo record back in the 90s as well. So it's just one of that familiarity kind of thing. It's like we all knew each other, and I just didn't realize, had I known earlier, we would have formed the band sooner. The combination of the four of us turned out to be a winning combination.
Yeah, that's something that you look back at it now and you think, man, that's what it took. But you didn't at the time. But it, sometimes things work out, you know, at the right time.
Exactly.
I think. Yeah. I was kind of thinking. So when you were said you played your last gig in February, right, as a band,
right,
before the pandemic, when you look back at that gig, what do you get from that? Because I'm sure when you were doing it, you didn't think that would be the last time you would play for 4 or 5 months or whatever it's been.
Oh,
do you look
no.
back at that, Mike, and think, wow, that's kind of an eerie. The reason I ask that is because I do high school. I retired from it, but I did high school broadcasting basketball and football. And the last game
right.
I did was right at the – right, like the day before everything closed down. And I can remember
it
was March 14th, I think, or something like that.
Right.
And I look back at that now, Mike, and I think, man, I mean, everybody was kind of on edge and nobody really wanted to touch anybody or be.
I
just think it was weird. And I just wonder if you look back at that time when you guys played, you know, knowing that, oh, we're going to probably play every couple of weeks or so. How does that feel when you look back at that?
Well, we had planned on taking a break after that show anyway. We rarely played.
Oh, okay.
As you know, living in Ohio, winters are not always the most conducive to, going out in February and March and playing shows.
Especially
so
Northeast Ohio.
Exactly. Yeah. I once played a show a few years back where it was pleasant enough in November, but by the time we came out, there was 8 inches of snow on the ground. So it was one of those, you know, long white knuckle drive home. And I vowed after that we would never play another show after Halloween. So the show we played was a benefit and for a friend. And we knew going in that was going to be our last show for a little while. And we were going to finish working on the record after that. But the difficulty there was after the pandemic hit and then we knew we had a record coming out, it was like, how are we going to promote the record if we can't go out on the road? So we've had to really change up how we approach the promotional aspect of things, which is, you know, as is everyone, it's not exactly like there's a playbook for releasing an album during a pandemic.
No, I don't think there is. There might be now, but, yeah, write one, Mike. Yeah.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
It was inadvertent at best, but, here we are, and, you know, the record's coming out Friday, so we better have a plan. And so far we've made do with what we can and, tried to get the word out as best we can.
Yeah, and I think marketing is always kind of a tricky thing anyway. And, I've been doing this show for a while since 2008 and I've seen marketing strategies change, you know, drastically. I mean, I've seen the music industry change so much since I've, you know, been involved in it in the 70s and seen things where, you know, how people would get their music out. And it was like a, you know, like that thing you do, the movie, you know, where,
oh yeah.
Yeah, that, you got played on the radio,
me,
and they just.
Yeah, we have that moment today when we got played on Rodney Bingenheimer's show. It was sort of like a think that thing you do moment where we said, "What? How did that happen?" You know.
Oh, that's awesome. What song did he play?
He played "That Time Is Now" with Lisa Michaels. It was released as a single on July 31st, and they got a hold of it and they ended up playing it, which, you know, surprised us all. We weren't expecting it.
No,
so
that's
bit,
really good.
Yeah,
congratulations.
Yeah, it was a bit like that thing you do. Yeah, yeah. National airplay is never anything to sneeze at.
Well, I'm a big fan of Little Stevens. I think what he's doing there is just incredible. I love listening to his show. Yeah. Anytime I get the chance to listen to his show, we have it in my wife's van. We have Sirius XM, but I don't get out a lot these days, Mike.
I've only put about 1,000 miles in my car since February. I've only had to fill up my gas tank like twice.
Yeah, isn't that
incredible?
I just don't
leave the house. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's like $2 a gallon or something.
Well, yeah, there was that period where it dropped really low into the 90s, and then it went back up. But I just stay home. I don't drive if I can help it.
Same way here. And that gives me like a lot of time to listen to music and new music and everything that I can get my hands on. But, you know, with the marketing strategy you were talking about, it's kind of a little bit, you know, trying to figure it out as you go. I think one of it's the weirdest things, Mike, but it's also kind of comforting in a way to know that you're not alone. I mean, it's like everybody is affected by this. And people from like brand new bands that are starting out to Sting. I mean, everybody is like hanging out in their pajamas thinking, you know, this thing is going to stop any day. And it's kind of hasn't done that. So, It is different that you can't get out and you can't play live or you can't play at festivals. And I think that was one of the things when they started canceling, I think it was South by Southwest. When they canceled that, I knew this was real.
Oh, right, right. We knew, I knew about a month in once, like you said, once we reached mid-March and everything locked down, and it was like, that's when I said I really got focused on the record. It was during that time that I had started on it. And some days that was the only thing that got me off the couch. I mean, it was, you know, you watch the news all day, you get depressed, and you can't keep scrolling the scroll of doom on your phone, you know, all the bad news. So
yep.
I got off the couch and I spent a lot of time really focused on the record. And that was one of the few things, like you said, music is one of those things that gets us through. And that really helped me get to this point where I can at least make some jokes about it. But like I said, a pandemic is nothing to laugh at. But man, it certainly makes you focus in ways you didn't think it was possible.
Oh, I was having that talk. And for the listeners out there, Mike and his band are from the Akron area, that northeast area up there. And we're in the right south of Columbus, Ohio. So we're Ohio buddies. And they announced yesterday that the Ohio State Buckeyes weren't going to play in the Big Ten this year. And I'm telling you, that was – oh, it was and I'm a big sports guy, but I thought, you know, I think that's the right call to make. I felt okay with that. I think the safety of the kids, the health is the most important thing. We can do without it.
Yeah. I didn't understand how they were going to have 100,000 people social distance. I know they were talking about reducing it down to 20,000, but still, I mean, you've got 100 guys on the team and they all have to be tested every 3 days or whatever. And I just didn't see how that was feasible.
Oh, I didn't either. And especially if you look at it from, you know, the liability standpoint of the university and all that. So, yeah, it was something. But it's just been a very incredible thing. But for the listeners, like Mike said, like we said earlier, there's always music. And the new music is from Librarians with Hickeys. And it's called Long Overdue, and it's you can pre-order it, but you can on BigSurRecords.com.
You can order it now. They'll ship it to you.
That's great. Now, is it? Do you have it in CD format? Do you have it in vinyl? How did you come up with that?
We ended up with CDs. We didn't want to go vinyl just yet on the first record, although our bass player Drew just keeps bugging me about that. And understandable. There's a pressing plant up in Cleveland that I have used in the past, and so we talked about it. But maybe for the next record we'll do that. But it's CD and digital, and you can get it at BigSurRecords.com. You can order both the CD and the digital.
Well, let's play another song, Mike. Let's play Next Time. Would you like to talk about that one?
Oh, sure. That's sort of my sleeper pick on the record. Part of the reason I say that is because my wife helped co-write the lyrics on that.
Oh, cool.
So she always enjoys hearing that song. We joke about that one as sort of the we call that like a lost track from a John Hughes film in about 1985. And it kind of veers into yacht rock land occasionally because of the saxophone, but Ray, our singer, says it always makes him think of the outfield. Just because,
oh, okay.
And I had, because we had to change the key a little bit. Originally, it was a little too high for it, so we dialed it down a step. It's one of my favorite records songs on the record because it not only has the saxophone, but it also has the Simmons drums that Rob got to play, and that was a lot of fun to try to get in that John Hughes vibe.
There you go. Well, let's play it. This is Next Time by Librarians with Hickeys. We'll be right back with Mike after this. I want to welcome everyone back to Independent Music Showcase on John Talk Radio. I'm your host, John Darlington. We have Mike Crooker with us tonight from Librarians with Hickeys. You can go on BigStirRecords.com and order their album. It comes out Friday, and they'll send it right to you. And it'll get there really quick because the postal service is really fast right now.
Just don't try to mail your ballot in.
I tell you a honestly true story, and I'm not complaining because I can't complain, but I'm like a vinyl junkie, and I've been retired for a few years, so I always looking for interesting vinyl, and I found a place out in California, and they had an album I wanted, and I ordered it, and it's sitting in Cincinnati, Ohio, at the Hub. It's been there almost 2 weeks, but I'm not complaining. It's like an album, but still, I'm thinking I could drive down there and get it.
It would be faster, yeah.
I could drive down and say, "Hey guys, just throw it out the window there, and I'll pick it up."
I could drive down there faster.
Well, Tuck, yeah, I've got a couple of things I want to ask you about, you know, your career and walking through that. But talk about Akron and the Akron area. There's just rich in music history. I mean, I've interviewed a bunch of bands from the 60s and 70s in the Cleveland, Youngstown area, and that Akron area. I mean, it's just rich with talent. Talk about that. I mean, I live pretty close to Dayton, Ohio, so it's like not even an hour from here. And a lot of people don't know how incredible that area is with music. I mean, the Oregon District and all the bands that played back in the 90s and the great. So I'm really proud of Ohio music. And if you just like to maybe a couple minutes, Mike, and talk about, you know, the history of rock music and the Akron area.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we've had a really good string of records that came out of Akron in the late 70s. There was the whole, the Waitresses, Devo, Chrissy Hynde, who moved to England to make it. But there was a band called Tin Huey, who was on Warner Brothers, which was Chris Butler's band before he had the Waitresses.
Right.
There was a lot of signings to major labels of Akron area bands in the late 70s and early 80s. And, you know, it kind of ebbs and flows. I mean, we've had those bands, and there was sort of that gold rush where we had Rachel Sweet, who was on Stiff. And then there was sort of a lull in the early 80s. And then it picked up again. There was a band out of Kent called Dink, who actually I helped work on their record back in the day. And that was in the mid-90s. And then we had, the Black Keys recently,
right,
more recently, in the early 2000s. So there's a history in the Akron-Kent scene of that, for sure. I mean, and that ties into the Cleveland area with Caribou and Rocket from the Tombs and sort of quintessential Northeast Ohio music, which is to say it doesn't all sound alike, but there's always a certain quirkiness to it that has always played well outside of the area. And then
and you guys keeping it going.
Yeah.
Didn't the Waitresses have that Christmas song that's really cool? They play every Christmas.
Yes. Christmas
Rap. Yeah. That's like the greatest Christmas song.
It truly is a great song.
It's just,
I've met Chris Butler a couple of times. Yeah, Chris Butler actually lived in Kent for years. He used to play at a bar in Kent where I live. I just live outside of Kent now. And I've met him here and there over the years. And he always holds a contest every year for the first person to hear Christmas rapping in a store. up over the music system, and he donates money to a local charity after that. But I always thought that was a great story. You know, it's like he knows. You know, that's become a classic now.
Oh yeah, and that's another thing with the with the pandemic, my wife and I, our main thing to get away was to go to the Kent Stage and see a concert.
Oh,
yeah. Stay up there.
That was the last place we played.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah,
I love that place. That's we would go and stay there at the new hotel there on the university
right there.
Oh,
yeah. Right down the street.
Yeah, and just walk around and have fun. And now, you know, we're just waiting for things to kind of, like you said, it'll probably be winter when we can't get up there, but when things break a little bit, hopefully. But yeah, it's, I've always asked people, I want to talk about your songwriting method, but do you think that, and I've talked to people about this, some people think I'm crazy, but with the geography, do you think certain geographies, like an area, maybe with like Seattle or something like that, there's just a vibe there that musicians can kind of get into, that songwriting is different, and there's like I don't even know how to explain it, but do you think geography has anything to do with that?
You know, in Seattle it's probably two things: the rain and coffee. You know,
everybody,
there's a lot of both there. And in Ohio we have a lot of snow. So I think there's a certain cyclical thing where we all hibernate and get to work on songs. And then when the weather gets a little nicer, we all get out and start to see each other. And then we start sharing our songs again. So I think, you know, there's a certain rhythm to that, both, you know, cyclical and seasonal, that probably does play into that from a regional standpoint.
Yeah. Well, explain to the listeners, Mike, about your songwriting style and how that works. And then we're going to kind of get into how you got started in music and stuff. But talk about your personal songwriting. I've asked this question. I'm getting close to 1,000 episodes here in a couple, 2 months, I think. And I've asked a lot of people this question about the songwriting style, and I get, you know, different answers every time. How does it work with Mike?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question, because there's periods where I go through intense writing cycles where there was a period of a few years back where I said, I'm just going to get up every day and write a new song. It doesn't have to be it doesn't have to have lyrics, you know, just the music part of it. And so every day for a month, I would like Monday through Friday, 9 to 5 o'clock. I would work on a song, and at the end of the day, at 5 o'clock, it would be done. And, you know, whether or not it was done, I mean, I would come back later once it was finished and I'd collect them all. And so what happened with that was I ended up with, you know, close to 100 songs over a 2-year period where, you know, some of them were more, soundtrack related, because I used to do film music for independent films. So some days it would lend itself more to that, but more often than not, it would be a rock song. And so what I would do then was I would send it to Ray, our guitar player, who also does the lyrics. And he would, I would sometimes give him a vibe or we always like to play the game within the band of who do you think this sounds like? So we'd riff on that, and we'd say, well, something like this or something like that. Even though it didn't sound anything like that, eventually we'd kind of circle around where the song was supposed to go. And so of the songs on the record, a lot of those were written, like I said, in that previous date. We were playing live a lot, so we got to take them out, road test them, get the arrangements down, find out what worked, what didn't work, and then come back around to it when it was time to record. We had a pretty good handle on this, not only the songs, but what the vision for the song was supposed to be.
Like you would gauge it by the reaction from the audience and the crowd?
Sometimes it would be like that too. You'd play it in front of people and you'd see what got a reaction and what didn't. And, you know, sometimes that's just when you're playing live. You know, not every song every night is exactly how you imagined it. Sometimes, sometimes it would be something you weren't expecting, and you would say, oh, that was great. What did we do differently? And you try to find that kernel of truth in that performance that you could then apply to the song in a recording. Because, you know, as you know, live music is really different than recording. I mean, it's two sides of the same coin, but writing stuff is much different than playing it live. Live is immediate and you get feedback and you know if you've done well or not. And writing is like sometimes chiseling a song out of marble. You kind of have to work at it a little bit and find the shape within in the piece of rock.
Yeah, I've when I talk to folks that spend a lot of time in the studio, I ask the question, are you thinking, is this going to translate live? Because who was it? It wasn't Mike Tittle, but somebody not too long ago was saying that they knew when they did their album, it wasn't going to translate live. They knew that because they used a lot of layers, a lot of overdubbing, a lot of instrumentation. And they did that on purpose because they wanted a certain sound, but they knew that that couldn't translate with the members of the band. Does that pose a problem? I mean, sometimes, Mike, when you're in the studio.
Oh, sure.
With that.
For certain songs, the songs at their core, when we would play them live, we tried to capture that, you know, that arrangement. Now, I would go back in as the producer and say, okay, for the recording, we're going to need more hand claps and tambourines, this needs a string part, this needs some backing vocals that we couldn't live. Now, live, yeah, we're probably much more of a garage band in that sense that it's never going to sound the same. And you can't worry about that at a certain level because the song at its core should be able to come through in a live situation. But on the record, you want to make it sound as good as you can.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, you can do things in the studio that you can't do live and vice versa. And it's like you said, it's two completely different things, but I just think that's really, really interesting. And I'm not sure if the everyday music listener understands that because they can go to a concert and think, man, that doesn't sound like the record, but it might be pretty hard sometimes to duplicate the studio part. And also like, I'm a big Eric Burdon and the Animals fan. I actually saw him and met him at Kent Stage, and he plays all of his old stuff, but he plays them differently. His arrangements are all different, and everything, it sounds like the old stuff, but it's jazzier and bluesier, you know, and it's got a whole different twist to it. I would imagine that would be more fun, you know, than playing it just as it was maybe in the studio 50 years ago or more than that. So do you guys do that? I mean, is there any like jam elements to your music where you think, hey, this sounded pretty cool?
You know, live you're able to stretch out. There's a couple of songs on the record, like Obsession, where there's a guitar solo that we can kind of ride a little bit live. But I think for the most part, especially for stuff you've heard on the radio, like around here, the radio station here plays us a decent amount, and so when people come to see us, I think they expect it to sound a certain way.
Right.
But you know, like somebody like Eric Burdon, who's been playing the same songs for 60 years, you know, I think he's earned that right to say, you know what, I don't want to play it just like the record tonight. And I wouldn't say we're at that point yet. I mean, we've obviously, only 4 years of being a band at that level, but we try to come as close as we can to the record. But having said that, you know, live, like I said, it's a different animal. So pardon the pun. And so, you know, there's elements that you have to bring to the song when you play it live. Like I said, the core of the song has to come through, but, I don't know if I'd say we play it the same way every night, but there's our songs are pretty structured in a way that there's only a few ways to kind of play that live. But like I said, Obsession is one song like that where we can stretch out that guitar solo a little bit and also at the end. Also coming back to that, where we do certain covers live where we do a version of The Mighty Quinn by Manfred Mann, which sounds more like the Jesus and Mary Chain playing, Manfred Mann playing the Mighty Quinn. And we stretched that one out, and that always seems to get a great response. Also, the B-side to our single, the Banana Splits song, I Enjoy Being a Boy in Love with You, which follows the form a little bit of the original Banana Split song, but we let that we extend that out a little bit live as well.
That's pretty cool. Why don't we play Obsession?
Sure.
My guest is Mike Crooker from the band Librarians with Hickeys. You can go on BigStirRecords.com and order their new release. It comes out Friday, long overdue. And okay, Obsession. What's the hidden message behind that?
Ray wrote that one completely. It was a song that he brought into the band that he had done previously, and we just love that song. It's gone through a lot of different iterations over the years, and I think he's told me that this is his favorite version of it, just because it sounds like the band live. It really it's that twin guitar thing with the Rickenbacker that Ray plays, and I play a Strat. And it's that real that two guitar attack that we love, and the guitar solo, and it's just a lot of fun to play live. And it's an interesting song if you listen to the lyrics. There's a bit of a stalkerish vibe to it, but in a very respectful way.
Oh yeah, very respectful stalker.
Yeah.
Let's play it. This is Obsession, Librarians of Hickeys. We'll be right back with Mike, and we'll ask him about how to get started in music when we come back on John Talk Radio's Independent Music Showcase.
Thank you.
And we're back on John Talk Radio's Independent Music Showcase. I'm John Darlington, and Mike Crooker is my guest, and he's with the Librarians with Hickeys, and they have a new release coming out Friday, long overdue, and you can go on BigStirRecords.com and order that, and it will come almost immediately to your house by your postal service. Might take them
a
day.
You're kindly postal service.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're really nice people, and I always respect them because it's a tough job. And,
that is a tough gig.
Yeah, it is a tough gig. That's a really cool song. Mike, we've got about 13, 14 minutes left. Talk about you and getting started in music and that whole thing, because I think it's very interesting for listeners to know. You know, they hear that music and get to know a little bit about the person in the interview, you know, where you grew up and how music affected you and when you started playing and how long you've been playing and some of the people that influenced you as a musician.
Sure. I was born in Chicago and sort of grew up listening to, the big AM radio stations there, WLS and WCFL. And I literally marinated in top 40 radio for, most of my younger years. And, after I moved here to Ohio, I moved here right at sort of peak Akron-ness as far as, music went for Akron. When I moved here, it was all these bands were getting signed and, it was literally just such an exciting time to be in Akron, which I don't think anyone has ever said ever. but it truly was at that time. That was the time. You couldn't help but be influenced by what you were hearing in not only in the clubs but on the radio. Here in north of us here in Cleveland, there was the big radio station WMMS, which, was a tastemaker as far as that went. I mean, they broke Bowie here. They broke Roxy Music. And so a lot of that seeped into what I was hearing. And then we also have a huge college radio consortium up here. I mean, there's four or five really big stations that were really at that time allowing, it was very freeform. And so you could turn in the dial anytime at night and hear things that you had never heard before and may have not heard again since. But
I love that.
Yeah, you never knew what you were going to get. And so by the time I was going to college at the University of Akron, I went and worked at the radio station, of course, because what else was I going to do? And, through that, I was also exposed to a ton of new music. This is in the mid-80s. And that's where I met a lot of the guys in the band. During that time period, I met a lot of musicians that are still friends to this day of mine that have just, at the end of the day, it all adds up to things that you hear in our record. I mean, you can't help but be, motivated or influenced by that. There's certain things on the record that I can pick out that I say, oh, that's so-and-so. I learned that from them. And they're like friends of mine, like bands that they were in, because bands that I had been in during that time period too, in the late 80s and early 90s, that, we would play out a lot and I'd hang out with these guys and, I'd learn. And so eventually that all adds up, the sum of the parts adds up to where you end up with on Long Overdue. And I hope some of that comes through.
Who are some of your biggest musical influences?
Ooh, that's a tough one. It depends on what day of the week it is, honestly.
It's Wednesday.
Yeah, is it Wednesday? Oh, good, because I woke up this morning and, honestly, I wasn't sure. My wife just got a clock for her birthday that has the date, the time, and the year on it.
Start with the basics, right? Yeah.
Exactly. Day, week, month, year. It still, you know, in my head, I still think it's like May, or, you know, it's just
or
been,
earlier.
Been one of
yeah.
those. Yeah, well, there was a long period where I thought it was March, and now I think it's May, but maybe June by now. I don't know. It depends. I mean, I always say that you get a good cross section of the band's influence, because the four of us. I mean, if you did like a Venn diagram of all the bands that we like, it would actually be not a particularly, it would be a fairly small circle, but that comes out in like some of the cover songs we play, because we all agree that we like those, or even if it wouldn't have been our first thing that we would have thought of, the one we play them, it sounds like us, you know, that sounds like us when we play them. I mean,
yeah.
We play stuff like, you know, the Monkees, the Kinks, Pink Floyd, early Pink Floyd, Syd Barrett, Pink Floyd.
Right.
Like I said, Jesus and Mary Chain, we play some covers. We do Pylon, we do REM, we do the Dukes of Stratosphere, because we love XTC so much that the Dukes and their other guys as their 60s band, that just totally plays
right.
into where a lot of our you know, background comes. But then we get a lot of interesting stuff like Brother Cornelius and Sister Rose. Like, we love a lot of that sort of R&B stuff from the 70s that really with strings and wah-wah guitars and stuff like that, where you wouldn't necessarily have picked that for us. But, you know, there's certain production things, you know, Stories, Brother Louie, stuff like that, where
yeah.
It's a very really good songwriting and really great production. So, I mean, if something is going to attract us, that's kind of where we're headed.
Now, and that's a
guided
good answer.
We also do Guided by Voices. I wanted to mention Guided by Voices because I know.
Yeah, we talked about that. The Dayton, Ohio,
yeah.
the Oregon
yeah.
Brainiac and all that was going on.
Right.
Yeah, it's just incredible. I just, you know, sometimes I get fixated with it, and I'll just get into a groove with a certain area of music, and it's just amazing what happened, you know, in Ohio in different areas. But one thing I want, we just have a few minutes left, Mike, but one thing I want to talk about is gear, because it's always, I used to have a show called Gear Talk on, and I would do that like once a month, and I haven't done it for a while, but it's a lot of fun to do. And what I would do is like have a guest like you on, and then I would say, pick your favorite album. And then you can kind of guide the people through that, and then talk about the gear that was used and how that influences.
Oh, yeah.
And so with what you do you use when you're in the studio and when you play live, and why do you use it?
Oh, that's really easy. I mean, I've been playing the same guitar since 1988. It's a yellow graffiti yellow Fender Stratocaster. It was supposedly the Jeff Beck model because of the hot rod colors on it. And I bought it because it had a rosewood neck and it plays like a dream. And I've never touched it in the 30 years that I've owned it, other than to change strings when they break. It's one
wow.
of those kind of deals where it's like that's for years I put it in a box or back in its case and didn't touch it. And then about when we started this band up, I took it back out of the case and there it was, you know, that sound was where I was going for. And Ray plays a Rickenbacker 330. It's a six string, not a 12 string. And our bass player Drew has a sparkly purple Fender jazz bass. And our drummer Rob actually plays a Cajon, which is interesting. He sits on it, but he has a double kick pedal set up to play the kick drum against his Cajon, which he actually sits on. So we call it the Ninja Drum Kit. It's really great for open mics. We can just drop in and set up in 2 minutes and be running
wild.
Out the door afterwards. So, you know, gear like that. I mean, I used to run a recording studio back in the 90s, and I used to have tons of gear, and I was having this conversation the other day, and basically everything in my studio, which is up on the third floor of our house, has been replaced by a laptop, an interface, a couple of good microphones, and a couple of good amps. It's like six pieces of gear now has replaced about 100
wow.
things that I used to have. So
that's
know,
amazing.
Towards that aspect of it. Yeah. So it really has changed how I do things. It's much faster now. with digital. I still have my reel-to-reel tapes and stuff like that, but, you know, I can also get my ideas down faster and get them out the door faster.
Hmm. Times are changing, I guess. Well,
Times
Mike, it's been great. Yeah, and they're still changing. Thank you so much for being on. I've had such a good time talking
you.
To you.
Yeah, you
and,
too. Thank you so much.
The album is a long overdue. Librarians with Hickeys. You can go on BigStirRecords.com. I highly recommend it. I think it's great. I listen to a lot of music, and some, you know, you go, oh, okay, and you kind of push it over to the side, and some you like to just listen to over and over because it's really good, and that's the way it is with this one. When I first heard it, I was very surprised and pleased. I surprised by the fact that I thought, wow, this is special. This is really good. So good luck with everything.
You. Thank you so much.
Yeah, and we'll stay in touch. And anything you'd like to say in closing?
Oh, just that, like I said, it's been a long path to get to this record. I'm glad it's finally coming out, and I'm finally glad to have the rest of the world get to hear it. So thank you so much for having us on.
Oh, it's great. Take care. Everybody out there, love each other, and we'll do this again next week. Everyone take care, and we'll talk to you later. Bye.
Sont exigibles.